Good morning. I'd like to begin by sharing just a brief thought about my experience of being a witness, as we have all been witnesses, to what has been happening to our brothers and sisters in Haiti. On Thursday and Friday night, my wife and I were particularly struck by the stories that we heard on the news. This was 2 days and 3 days, respectively, after the earthquake had hit. And the story that we kept hearing and the frustration that we kept hearing about and experiencing was this sense of mounting outreach that was growing but simply couldn't hit its target. Planes were literally in the air, but there was nowhere for them to land. So we felt very frustrated, and I know this continues on. I went to the Episcopal Church's website because I wanted to begin to find out more about Episcopal Relief and Development and what they were doing in this particular circumstance. And on the website, they had put up a prayer from our prayer book. It's actually from Compline, which is our service for the end of an evening. And I've heard this prayer many, many times, but this put it in new light for me, in particular because night was falling. And I was suddenly aware of something I hadn't been, which is that we are in the same time zone as Haiti. So that as night was falling on us Thursday night, so too was darkness falling on Haiti for another terrifying night in which every hour mattered. And so this prayer for the end of the day has particular meaning for me, and I'd like to share it with you now. I know it's an evening prayer, but it perhaps might serve us. Keep watch, dear Lord, with those who work or watch or weep this night, and give your angels charge over those who sleep. Tend the sick, Lord Christ, give rest to the weary, bless the dying, soothe the suffering, pity the afflicted, shield the joyous, and all for your love's sake. Amen. George will speak a little bit more in the announcements about what we can do as a parish and as individuals at this time. But as I explore the gospel and as I was reading this story of the wedding at Cana, in which Jesus transforms water into wine, a story about the extravagance of God's love, I had this question in front of me, which is, how do you talk about the extravagance of God's love when the stories we see and witness are so painful? It feels almost impossible, but perhaps there is no better time than now to talk about this abundant love. There's no better time than when our pain, or the pain that we witness, is as acute as it is. I think it calls us to take ever more seriously just how deep and extravagant God's love really is. The story of the wedding at Cana, where Jesus transforms water into wine, is, in the Gospel of John, the very first story of Jesus' ministry. It happens just days after Jesus is baptized. It happens just days after he meets the first few disciples who choose to begin to follow him. And unlike the other three Gospels, have the story, the tradition of the Transfiguration, in which Jesus goes onto the mountain and reveals him. He's revealed to several of the disciples for who he really is. That story isn't in the Gospel of John. Instead, we have this story, where in the setting of a great celebration, when the wine has run out, Jesus reveals who he is to everyone there, but really to whoever has eyes to see and ears to hear, which is primarily just those disciples. But there are a few who are at this celebration who are willing to at least see what happens and say, yes, I see what's happening. And there are, of course, some at the party who don't see what happens, even though it's right in front of them. But these disciples who are just now meeting Jesus, this is their first glimpse into a brand new world. A world in which what they thought was possible and what they thought was impossible had to be called into question. This was the beginning. It would take a long time for them to really get what was going on. But this was just the very beginning, when the soil, the foundation of their understanding was beginning to be tilled, so that Jesus could plant some new seeds within them. And there are others at this party, at this celebration, who see what Jesus does, or perhaps see it and have a hard time believing it. And I think each one of those can give us an example. We compare to each person in the story different times in our lives. I think we see Jesus through different eyes. I think we can compare to a number of those in the story, the servants, the steward, by the extent to which our assumptions, we allow our assumptions to be challenged by our encounter with Jesus. And so I want to take a look at the story from different perspectives. And I want to start not with somebody, but something. I want to talk about those vessels. Jesus says, when he hears that the wine has run out, he points to six vessels, six stone vessels that were used for the traditional rites of purification. These vessels were about 20 to 30 gallons each, which add them all up, and within that is about 150 gallons of empty jar. And Jesus asked the servants to fill them up so that he can transform that water into wine. Now, the first thing to notice is that he is using an object of this rich tradition, these vessels that were used for purification, and not destroying them, not casting them away, not speaking badly about them, but using them to bring forth new life. Not saying that purification isn't important, but that you don't stop there. That there's something new that's being brought out of this. The second thing about those vessels is their size. They're huge. They're so much bigger than they could possibly than would be necessary. It's extravagant. It's hyperbolic. It's too much, but that's okay. Because the point is that what God is offering is more than we could ever ask or imagine. 150 gallons is more water than anybody needs for ritual cleansing, and 150 gallons of wine is more wine than anybody needs at a party. But perhaps we can take a lesson from that extravagance as we consider how we respond to people in need, especially to people in Haiti. Perhaps our response can be just as extravagant, just as over the top. But when you have vessels that are this big, and this isn't totally talked about in the story, somebody has to fill them up. And moving 150 gallons from one point into these six vessels in first century Palestine, I have to imagine, takes a lot of work. There's no running water. And so I think of these servants who do the filling up as the unsung heroes of this story. Of course, it's about Jesus. It's about seeing for the first time who Jesus really is. But these servants play a really important role, don't they? They carry the water. They do the hard work of filling up these vessels so that Jesus is ready to do what he needs to do. To me, that shines a new light on servant ministry, on what it means to care for one another. It means doing a lot of hard work, carrying a lot of water. It can be thankless work. It can be hard work. But we do it for our brothers and sisters who don't know that we're necessarily even doing it. And our reward is that we get to be there when the miracle happens. John makes a point of saying that though some people at the party knew what happened and some didn't, the servants saw it. And they might not know what it means, and they might not even believe in anything new, not yet. But they do see what happens. And I think that's important. Because there is someone in the story who sees but doesn't see. And that's the steward. And the steward is kind of my favorite character in the story for a couple of reasons. One, he's kind of us. At least he's me a lot of times, because he's the one who he's responsible for this celebration. If it goes well or doesn't go well, it's on him. And he's the type of guy who looks for reasonable, logical reasons for things that happen. And he's also the one who knows the difference between good wine and bad wine. It's an important part of the steward's job. And so what he does, when he is asked to verify that the water is now wine, he does. He says, "This is wine." And immediately he goes into his head. He starts thinking. He starts trying to find a reason for how what just happened has happened. And he looks around and he comes up with the best answer that he can. And it doesn't totally make sense, but it's the closest to sensible. And he figures out, incorrectly, that the bridegroom had a special stash of wine that he had brought. But of course, that isn't what happened. The person who is responsible for the new celebration is Jesus. And this is why the other thing that I really like about the steward is kind of a narrative tool, because he's the person who tells us that it isn't just wine. It's good wine. It's good wine. And since this is a wedding celebration, it reminds me of images of courtship and of the beginning of courtship and of first dates. And it makes me think of a first date. When you're out on a first date, you're hoping that this will grow into a lifelong relationship. And I'm speaking for a moment to those who pick up the tab and the waiter comes and offers the wine list. You don't order the cheap stuff. You order the good wine. Because you want to show extravagance. You want to say that this is something you want to grow into a lifelong thing. And I think that that is what Jesus is offering us. Jesus is offering the good wine because he wants this to be a lifelong love affair with God. This isn't about doing right and wrong. This isn't about the old tradition of purification and tradition. This is about a lifelong relationship with God. And Jesus wants it to feel like love, because that's what Jesus feels for us. That's what Jesus felt for everyone at that wedding. Certainly what Jesus felt for these disciples. And their response was to believe in what they were seeing. I think they were a little bit shocked. I'm sure they were confused. But I also want to believe that the disciples were beginning to feel something like butterflies in their stomach, in that place where we begin to sense that we might be falling in love. This is Jesus shining forth, offering a vision of the world that transcends our understanding of what is possible and what is not. Perhaps we can respond to this vision by seeing things a little less as the steward might, and just a bit more like the disciples, who are beginning to grow in faith as they believe, as they see and they believe. Perhaps in doing this, we can drink more deeply of the joyful wine that God offers us, even in the midst of the type of hardship that we have witnessed this past week. May we continue to know and bear witness to this presence of Christ in our celebrations and in our moments of pain.